This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Joy Powers. It's Indigenous Peoples Day in parts of the U.S. In others, it's Christopher Columbus Day, a fact that many tribes take issue with, given his crimes against Native peoples, including enslavement, murder, and genocide.
Although Native American history predates U.S. history by thousands of years, many history textbooks condense it to just a few paragraphs. For many, the most prominent moments in that history are Thanksgiving and the Trail of Tears, forced relocations and death marches, which killed thousands of Native people in the 1800s.
But throughout the history of this country, Native people have continued to fight for their rights through battles, legislation, and demonstrations. Heather Briegel is a member of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin and a historian and lecturer on Native American activism and policies. She will be in Milwaukee for a lecture on that very topic, and she joins me now. Heather, thanks so much for joining us here on Lake Effect.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
This is maybe an odd place to start, but I was really curious. When you first talk to non-Native people, especially, about your work and what you do, how do they respond?
It kind of usually depends on the type of setting, kind of also helps determine how someone reacts to it. But I do really mainly speak to non-Native people. And when I do start talking about especially topics that are not the most pleasant, there is usually some look of resistance that I can see throughout the audience until they realize that I'm not really just attacking non-Native people. I'm just really here to educate you about a certain event or situation. And then the reaction is more of coming from a place of education where they want to learn more and find out more about whatever they can about the Native people in this country. And then usually at the end of it, it's those people who usually have the looks of resistance that come up to me at the end and are usually like, thank you so much for talking, thank you, I learned so much, I didn't know this before, I definitely want to find out more information.
Yeah, I mean, personally, there was so much that I really didn't know. What are the kind of misperceptions that you come across when you really start talking to people?
Honestly, legitimately, that we are all the same type of Native when we're really not. We're different. While we're all Indigenous to this country, we are different in our practices, in our language, in our thought processes and feelings. But I think one of the other misconceptions is that I saw this on Facebook actually a while ago, and I thought it was quite funny, but it fit perfectly, that people tend to think of, Indigenous people or Native people, being at one with nature and harmony and, all of the good things. But what they fail to realize is that we are activists as well. We are resisting. We are trying to decolonize. We are trying to embrace our religion again. So while, yes, we do hold nature and Mother Earth sacred, we're out there fighting. And I think that's a big misconception that people don't realize, is that we're out there with you fighting.
That's what so much of your talk is about. When you first start talking about activism, where do you start?
I kind of talk about it in a little bit more of a modern sense, where I talk about the formation of the American Indian Movement in the 1960s. However, one can personally go back farther than that and talk about our activism in sense of like the Indian Wars that happened, when there was fighting that would happen when, the United States was trying to expand westward. So you've got the Great Sioux War, you've got the Black Hawk War, you've got Red Cloud's War, you've got the Battle of Little Bighorn. I mean, these are all acts of resistance because we were resisting colonization. We were resisting settlers coming out west, and we were resisting, the invasion from the people who were discovering gold. So you can go back farther and talk about that. That could take a semester in college. That's how long it could take. But when I talk about it for an audience, I usually start with the more modern civil rights era movement in the 1960s with the formation of the American Indian Movement.
The American Indian Movement is fascinating. And when you talk about AIM and when you talk about the larger movement, I can kind of remember learning about that in high school history class, but It was maybe a few paragraphs in a textbook. It wasn't something that we really dug into the same way that we dug into the civil rights movement, but it did have a similar impact just on the Native American community.
Right, and you have all of these movements happening at such a volatile time in our country. I mean, in the 1960s, you have the overall civil rights movement happening. You have the Civil Rights Act of 1964. You have the Voting Rights Act of 1965. You have, you know, second wave feminism happening. You have the LGBT movement happening and the rise of, you know, Harvey Milk and LGBT rights. You've got AIM, the American Indian movement happening. You've got, you know, laborers, Chicanos, all of those movements happening at one time. To be personally honest, I don't actually think I remember in high school, I went to high school in Michigan, but I don't remember hearing anything about the American Indian movement. It probably wasn't until I got to college, and even then it was maybe just a paragraph or so, like, oh, this was happening too, by the way, but like an afterthought of the main civil rights movement going on.
Yeah, I can remember the image, which is, I think, why I remember it. In my textbook, they had an image of protesters, I believe, on Alcatraz, which you also mentioned in your speech.
Yes, I think we probably remember the same image.
It's an iconic image, yeah.
Absolutely. And yeah, Alcatraz, I think, wow, they held that for over a year. They held Alcatraz Island for over a year. And that was a culmination of all tribes coming together. It started with 80 people, and at one point, there was well over 200 people on the island. So that was pretty awesome in a way to bring, you know, awareness to the breaking of treaties and land being stolen and wanting an area just for, you know, us to embrace our culture and to be able to really feel like you could be free in a certain area. So, you know, when I first read about Alcatraz, I thought that was fascinating.
I'm speaking with Heather Briegel. She is about to give a lecture over at the Milwaukee Public Museum about Native American activism and policies. And, you know, really, when you get into all of this, it's such a deep history in our country. Where you started, at least in the lecture that I was listening to, was with President Andrew Jackson and the Indian Removal Act and, of course, the Trail of Tears. And I think that's where a lot of people often stop when it comes to Native American history. They stop at this really dreadful death march. Our perceptions around that, at least my perceptions, were that, yes, there was activism. Obviously, there was fighting, but I didn't recognize how much legal activity was going on even then and how much it has continued today.
Yeah, absolutely. When I do talk about policy, I do start with, you know, Andrew Jackson, good old friend to the Native Americans, who was instrumental in basically making sure that there weren't any Native tribes in the southeastern portion of the United States. Thousands of people moved, thousands more died. It was just absolutely ridiculous. And then to find out how through amendments and through bills and through the Constitution, they were able to do all of this stuff and, you know, force us to move. And then what's really, really interesting is when I do talk about policy even more, and even for my own personal education and knowledge, as I was researching things, it didn't dawn on me that Native Americans, we were not considered citizens of the United States until 1924. And I was doing the math, and it dawned on me that my grandfather was 13 before he was considered a citizen of the United States. In the land that he was born in the country that he was born in, he wasn't considered a citizen officially until 1924. And that is absolutely insane. So it's no wonder why they were able to, why while these policies and the government were able to get away with things for so long, because they could. We weren't citizens, so they could govern us however they wanted.
You know, there's been a lot of talk about Andrew Jackson closer to the beginning of Donald Trump's presidency, and he has made it very clear that he is a fan of Andrew Jackson. When you hear politicians like Donald Trump, like some people in the GOP, praising President Andrew Jackson, how does that make you feel? What do you think of?
Oh, God. I think it was last year where, it was either last year or earlier this year, to be honest, it's all kind of blending together. But Donald Trump held a ceremony in the White House. I feel like it was in the Oval Office. And he was honoring some Navajo code talkers. And in the background was a portrait of Andrew Jackson. I lost it. I lost my cool. And I'm wondering, I mean, you know anything about politics, it's all a game of optics, how things are perceived. And it was kind of like he was backhandedly honoring these veterans, these Navajo code talkers, with a portrait of Andrew Jackson looming over them. And, you know, the grace and dignity to which these veterans handled that situation was amazing. But to not understand the history behind that man, behind Andrew Jackson, to not understand the genocide for which he's responsible for, and, you know, the stealing of land and the stealing of homes, the stealing of lives, I mean, it's appalling. And to hear politicians, to hear the President of the United States and others in his party praise him, it baffles me, along with everything else going on in the country right now. It absolutely baffles my mind that you can, you know, sing the praises of a man who governed over such a dark time in our country. It's the same way why I don't understand why people praise Christopher Columbus. It's the same concept. I don't get it. I mean, these men were not great. And I think that's one thing that we do in history is we try to, you know, sugarcoat it. And I don't sugarcoat it. And I don't feel like I need to, because I feel like the history speaks for itself. And the history says Andrew Jackson was not a good man. So it really, it hurts my heart. It hurts my spirit when I hear people sing his praises.
Understandable.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the Trump administration and looking at Native American activism today, there are a few things that the administration has proposed and some things that they have set in motion that really do harken back to this long history of struggle, really, with United States policies. What are some of the things that have come up in, you know, the last couple of years that activists are really fighting against?
Well, again, I think first and foremost at the front lines is the stopping of pipelines. When we thought we had a small victory during the Obama administration when he halted the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline and basically Keystone Pipeline as well, and then Trump is elected and he comes into office and he immediately signs those into work, all in the name of progress and in creating jobs, not fully understanding, or probably in his case, not caring that he's actually destroying land and destroying sacred, you know, burial sites. The Dakota Access Pipeline goes straight through some burial grounds, you know, that are important and sacred to the Standing Rock tribe and the other Sioux and Lakota tribes in the area. But they're important. They might not be land that belong to them, you know, through treaties, but I mean, they are lands that are important. So first and foremost, the stocking of pipelines, the protection of our water, not just for Native people, but for all people. Here in Michigan, we have our own issues with water, with our Flint water crisis, with Line 5 going through the Straits of Mackinac. There's water shutoffs in Detroit. Our students in Detroit public schools don't have clean drinking water right now, because they just found lead in their water, just like they did during the Flint water crisis. So water, of course, is first and foremost the protection of our Mother Earth. Another issue that I know that has come up within Native communities is also the issue with our missing and murdered Indigenous women. There are no statistics that are held on us, so we don't know how many are missing and gone and never to be found again. And that, I think, comes with how complicated investigating crimes on reservations can be. It's so intricate and so complicated reservations are technically under federal jurisdiction. So do you call the state police? Do you call the local police? Do you call the FBI? Or do people even care that, you know, our Native women are going missing? Another issue is, I just read not that long ago, that the Trump administration, one of the things that they want to do is they want to, so we're classified as sovereign nations, and that's how we're recognized to the U.S. government. But they want to reclassify us as a race as opposed to sovereignty, and that affects funds that we get for health care for our tribes, for our nations, for our peoples. A lot of people, a lot of our elders, you know, rely on those health care benefits that they get from the government, and if they reclassify, you know, Native Americans, that affects that as well. Another issue that's going on that just came up, the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe, which is the tribe that you learn about during the first Thanksgiving, they actually just lost some land that was supposed to be put in federal trust for them. So they were already in the process of developing this land. They were going to create a new casino, I believe a museum, some educational areas as well. And the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is under the Department of the Interior, took that land away. So now there's a fight for that, because if it's a possibility that the federal government can take land away from one tribe, they can eventually end up taking it away from all of us. That threatens our sovereignty. I mean, there are so many issues that I think that people aren't aware of that happen in Native country that are equally as important to the issues that are happening to the general population right now.
Yeah. Well, Heather Briegel, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect, and thank you for sharing your work.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me. You know, anytime I can share our history or a little bit of what's going on in our community, I'm always up for that.
Heather Briegel is a historian and lecturer who will be in Milwaukee tomorrow for the lunch and lecture series at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Briegel is also at the Racine Public Library tonight in celebration of Indigenous Peoples Day.